Today's episode of Ariel Helwani's MMA show contains explicit language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Back in your life on this Wednesday, December 18th, 2019. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Hope you're doing well on this frigid Wednesday afternoon here in New York City, back from Las Vegas. What a great trip that was. Again, thank you very much to everyone who attended the roadshow on Friday night at the Jimmy Kimmel's Comedy Club, a fantastic venue. Great turnout. If you have not listened to the show yet, it was a lot of fun. As much, if not more fun, then back in June, and once again, there was another surprise winner. Love doing those shows. The trivia format is a lot of fun. The fans are into it. The crowd is into it. The fighters are into it. Everyone's into it. And so I hope we get to do more in 2020. Of course, UFC 245 is in the books. There's just one more UFC event of the decade that goes down this Saturday in South Korea, Frankie Edgar against Korean Zombie. And then we're done. But there's also two Bellator events too. There's a Bellator event on Friday in Hawaii, a salute to the troops event. And then there's another one on Saturday. They did the same thing last year. Both events are solid. Bellator 236 on Saturday's headlined by Aleem Aleem McFarlane, Bellator's rising star, one of the faces of the promotion, of course, proud Hawaii native. And she'll be joining us later in the program to talk about her upcoming title fight on Saturday against Kate Jackson. Also on that card, by the way, AJ McKee returning in the featherweight Grand Prix. Love talking to Aleem Aleem. Interesting times at 125. Of course, friend of hers, Liz Carmouche, recently released from the UFC, so we'll get her thoughts on that as well. So we'll talk to Aleem Aleem in the middle of the show. Towards the end of the show, we'll have New York Rick on to talk about the fallout from 245, to talk about the road show. We'll even talk to TST, who made his maiden voyage to Las Vegas last week. Get his thoughts on what it was like for a minimalist to be in Las Vegas. Get his thoughts on his guy Colby Covington losing. We'll talk to New York Rick about where Covington and Usman go from here, where Volkanovski and Holloway go from here. Perhaps a little bit about Amanda Nunes as well. But first things first, let's talk about the breaking news of the day. The breaking news of the day is that Rory McDonald, the pride of Canada, the former UFC title contender, the former Bellator welterweight champion who fought not that long ago, just a few weeks ago against Douglas Lima, has left Bellator and has signed a multi-fight exclusive deal with the Professional Fighters League. He will debut next season in the 2020 season. He'll be a part of their welterweight season, and he will vie for not only the welterweight title, but the $1 million cash prize at the end of the season. Massive news, by far the biggest signing in the history, the short history of PFL, and we are very excited and proud to have Rory McDonald in his first interview since signing that deal right here on the program. Rory, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure, as always, to talk to you, and congratulations on this big deal.
Thank you very much.
All right, so can we start with how this happened? We last saw you not that long ago. Like I said, you were fighting against Douglas Lima, end of the welterweight Grand Prix, big rematch. Unfortunately, it didn't go your way, but it was at the end of October, so we're essentially talking a month and a half or so ago. When you left that fight, when you walked out of that cage, did you know that that was your last Bellator fight?
I didn't. So how it all came about was before the Douglas Lima fight, we had reached out to Bellator and seen if they wanted to strike a deal before the contract ran out. And they opted to not and kind of, I guess, risk, dealing with it after the fight. And then we didn't get an offer from them. So the window of opportunity, closed for them to make a deal. Like, they had first rights to make an offer for a certain amount of time. and we didn't hear back from them. And we so once that opportunity closed, or that window closed, we started reaching out to other organizations that were interested, and PFL stepped up and made a great offer. And we didn't hear back from Bellator to have the right to match it. So, yeah, it's an amazing opportunity. I'm super happy, and it's a real blessing from the Lord.
Are you disappointed that Bellator didn't make an offer?
You know what? I'm happy with where I'm at with moving forward with PFL. I think they have some big goals. They want to change the game, and they believe in me to be one of their first marquee signings moving forward, and I'm really excited to be a part of it.
Okay, I'll ask it in a different way. Are you surprised they didn't make an offer?
A little bit, yeah.
How come?
From when I first signed with Bellator, it seemed like they wanted to use me to be, a marquee guy for them, and it just seemed like their interest in me kind of died over the years. I'm not sure, or their goals changed, or I'm not really too sure why it didn't happen on their end. I haven't really heard too much from them, to be honest.
So someone who's on the outside looking in would say, all right, they gave you the opportunity to fight Musasi for the middleweight title. You were part of the Grand Prix. You fought in the main event, opportunity to fight $4 million. Could you explain why you felt maybe like their interest in you died down over the years?
I guess it may be just from like looking at the way they promoted the last fight. It seemed like they really, were gunning for Douglas Lima. And even though I was the champion, I just didn't really feel that respected as far as how I was being promoted. But I mean, I was cool about it. I mean, that was their angle on promoting the fight, and that's all fine. But I guess I just was a little surprised that they didn't step up to the plate on this one.
Do you think?
I don't know the reasoning. You'd have to speak with them.
Of course, a lot was made of the post-fight interview after the John Fitch fight. Do you feel like their feelings towards you changed after that, when you were talking about, maybe not wanting to hurt people anymore and all the aftermath that came from that? Do you feel like they lost faith in you?
Maybe they did. But you know what? I came back after that and gave them two great fights. So
yeah,
I don't think it's justified if that's what they're...
And they never said that to you, right?
No.
And so now that you decided to go to PFL, since making that decision, since informing them of that decision, since the news has been out for several hours, you have not heard from the Bellator executives or anything? No, thank you for your time. No, let's talk. Nothing like that?
No, I haven't heard anything.
Is that common? I mean, you left the UFC. Was it the same type of deal with the UFC?
Yeah, no, I didn't hear anything from them either. I mean, I'm not trying to leave on a sour foot with anybody. I didn't with UFC either. But
yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, we're all trying to make the best deal. We're both trying to make good deals for our business. So I'm trying to do the same, and respect to Bellator for everything they've done for me, and I really enjoyed my time with them and all the opportunities getting to compete on their stage. And I cherish the time I had with them. And I, from my point of view, I'm not leaving off on a bad foot with them.
Okay. And I got some questions about this, so I just wanted to clear it up. Because you were champion going into the Lima fight, had you retained the title in that fight, would you have had to stick around and basically the champion's clause kicks in, but because the fight didn't go your way because you lost, that made you a free agent? Because some people were confused, like how could he have gone into a title fight with one fight left?
Yeah, that's pretty much what would have happened. If I would have won the fight, I would have been champion, and then they would have had the right out, like, to re-sign me. And I wouldn't have been able to negotiate with anybody else. So yeah.
And you would have been okay with that?
Well, I mean, I think this worked out great for me. I mean, yeah. I feel this was a great deal for me. So, you know, praise God for working it all out for my good. I'm super happy about it.
And just curious, before you ended up with PFL, did you talk to many other promotions? Did you even talk to the UFC?
I didn't. I didn't talk to them, no. I just don't feel like the landscape of MMA right now and in their organization, like, that I would get the kind of offer that I'm looking for. You know, I'm not closed off to it, but I don't think it was something that, you know, was worth looking into.
Do you mind sharing the other promotions that you spoke to?
No, I'm just going to keep it to myself.
Okay. Was anyone close to PFL?
No.
Okay. Would it be fair to say that you got a raise? Like you're getting more money from PFL than you did Bellator?
Yeah.
Well done. So you must be thrilled.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm extremely happy. You know, I feel like, it's a blessing from God. I'm really excited.
How familiar were you with PFL before signing with them? Like, have you been watching what they're doing? The format is different, the season, then the two fights in one night, and then the $1 million. Did you know about all this, or did you have to educate yourself about them once they became a serious player?
I was watching. I didn't know everything I do now, but I mean, for the most part, I was pretty up to date on how they run things. I know it's a very unique way of they have a unique approach to their format. They have seasons, whereas other organizations, they just have kind of, you know, they promote each fight uniquely, like, or like differently, and everyone climbs the ladder, so to speak. Where PFL has seasons. I think it's an interesting take on it. I think it's great for fans. It's great for fighters that aren't, you know, big on talking, like myself, like talking trash, starting drama, because it's performance based, you know. So I can go out there and be myself, and just focus on being a martial artist.
I'm assuming you met with the PFL brass. Like I said, I think this is the biggest signing in their history. What were they saying to you that caught your eye as far as trying to sell you on the promotion? And did they make you feel like a star? Like, you know, we're human beings, right? It's nice to feel wanted and loved. Did they make you feel like this was a big deal for their organization?
Yeah, absolutely. I never got to meet face-to-face, but on the phone, I talked to the CEO, Pete Murray, I believe his last name is.
Yep.
And, he's been a really... he's really excited, and he believes in me. So it's nice to, have the guys, reaching out and like having faith in me that I'm gonna, build the brand with them, and they believe in me that I could, they're giving me big opportunities, and the deal itself, it gives me motivation to, perform at my best. And It's fantastic.
Because their structure is different, I'm assuming the deal is like more by season as opposed to amount of fights. Is that it? Because they don't know how many fights you're going to have if you make it to the finals or not, right? So is it like a multi-year deal as opposed to a multi-fight deal?
Yeah.
How many years is it for?
I don't know. I don't know if I should say. It's more than one.
Okay, fair enough. And how do you feel about the potential idea of fighting twice in one night? Because if you make it to the semis, you'll have to fight twice in the same night. How do you feel about that?
I think that's great. It's something that I've always wanted to do since I was a young kid, watching like the old Pride and K1 fights, seeing how guys would be in those old tournaments. They would fight multiple times in a night, and I always thought that was very interesting, and it'll be the first time in my career that I get to do that. So that's actually one of the things I'm looking forward to most.
Okay. One of the main, I think a lot of people were shocked by this news. No one saw it coming. I don't even know if a lot of people knew you were a free agent after the Lima fight. But one thing that I keep seeing is, all right, you know, he's just trying to go for the money, which I think is a ridiculous comment because we're all trying to do everything for money. That's why I do my job. That's why everyone does their job. You don't do anything for free. But hey, he's going for more money to fight lesser competition because he doesn't love the sport as much as he once did. Is that an unfair comment from the fans? Do you love MMA as much as you always did?
Yeah, absolutely I do. But at the end of the day, I mean, if I were to ask those people, would you negotiate with another company that's giving you a raise and better perks, or would you just want to re-sign with the current company because you're passionate about your work there? I mean, I'm just as passionate, but I have a better offer. I mean, it's just business, you know. So, PFL and their offer works for me and my goals. Every fighter is different. They have to assess what their goals are in this sport, and sign with the company that gives them those opportunities. For me, I'm going with the flow and trying to reach my goals. And PFL right now is giving me the best opportunity.
After the Lima fight in October, did you consider at all calling it a career? Did that thought cross your mind?
No. I like I've said about 400 times since the John Fitch fight, I still have a long while to go. I think I'll be fighting until I'm around the age of 40.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's another 10 years because you're 30. You're turning 31 in July.
Yeah, something around there. We'll see. I mean, I always play it by ear, but like just how things go. But, you know, if I were to, you know, project how long I would keep doing this, it'll probably be around that.
Is there a part of you that almost regrets the Fitch fight? Like, you know, you mentioned being asked about it 400 times. Is there a part of you that thinks to yourself, like, man, I wish I wasn't that honest because now here I am having to answer or talk about this a gazillion times since April. Do you regret even saying how you were feeling in that moment?
A little bit, but it's okay. I mean, at the end of the day, I showed my heart, and at the end of the day, I also get to explain my faith and you know, explain what happened there and how God has been working in my life. And, you know, that's one of the main things that I want to use, you know, as a fighter, is use the platform I've been given to glorify God and tell about his goodness and that it's for everybody, you know, that God loves everybody and could change their life like he did for me.
Have you talked to any other fighters who are as religious as you, or maybe they've reached out to you after hearing you speak and talk to them about how they balance, you know, the faith, but also the sport of mixed martial arts, which at times could be a gruesome sport. Do you know of any other people that go through this as well?
After the John Fitch fight, a lot of Christians reach out to me in support and, you know, tried to basically, you know, let me know that, you know, it's okay what we're doing and, you know, don't feel bad. But I mean, those were comforting messages, but, you know, at the end of the day, it was a personal relationship with God that, you know, gave me revelation on what I was going to do next in my life.
Do you know when your debut will be for PFL? Like what month?
I don't know the month. I know their season starts in the springtime, so hopefully the start of that.
Okay, and I'm assuming, I just have to ask, I'm assuming you don't know who your opponent will be, right? For your first fight?
No.
Or where it will be?
No, I don't. This all came together really quickly in the last today, so.
Wow. I mean, is it a little surreal that you're no longer with Bellator?
It is a bit. It's, you know, there's been a lot of changes in my life the last few years, you know, from UFC to Bellator, now Bellator to PFL. So it's exciting, you know, that's I'm ready for it, though. You know, that's the kind of character I am.
And in your conversations with them, did they say to you that they're going to try to go after other big names, trying to beef up their roster? Have they expressed this to you?
Yeah, I believe that's their goal, is to, you know, sign big names and keep moving up the ranks and be a major player in the sport.
Okay. And you're going to be at 170, right? No more 185?
Yeah.
Okay. And any plans of Canada? I feel like it's been a while since you've been back. Are they? And I felt like they dropped the ball, Bellator did, without going to Canada, with you and Julia Budd as champions, both BC people. Have they told you about any plans of putting on a show in Canada with you on it?
Yeah, Pete, actually, we were on the phone, I think it was yesterday, and he had expressed some interest to get into Canada and, you know, use me as leverage to break into the Canadian market.
Huge. All right. And do you like the fact that you get a few months off here before fighting again? You know for a fact you won't be fighting in the winter, probably May or June, right? Are you okay with that?
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess it would be May or June would be my next fight. I'm good with that.
Okay.
Just some time to get better and keep practicing, you know?
All right. And by the way, last thing, how's it being a father of two now?
It's fantastic. I just had my son 5 months ago, so it's just been amazing. I have a 3-year-old daughter and a 5-month-old boy, so life is good, man.
And one day, if that young boy says to you he wants to be a fighter like his dad, what do you say to him?
Well, we'll see how he is in the gym first.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you rather him not be a fighter, though, knowing what the sport, you know, knowing how the sausage is made, so to speak?
Right. Yeah. You know what? I just hope that he follows his passions and what the Lord has skilled him in. But I hope he can, you know, whatever he's passionate about and he has a heart for, I'll support.
All right. Great answer. Okay, last thing. Is this the best deal of your career?
Sorry?
Is this the best deal of your career?
Yes.
Amazing. Well done, my man. Congratulations. I'm very happy for you. I'm looking forward to this very much. By far the biggest signing in their history, and you've shaken things up. So well done to you and the team. Congratulations. Nice little holiday present for the family as well. Enjoy the holidays. And thanks, as always, for giving me time, Rory. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Ariel.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. There he is, Rory McDonald, the newest member of the Professional Fighters League. Massive news broken this morning by us at ESPN, and no one saw this coming. I don't think many people knew that Rory was a potential free agent going into that fight against Douglas Lima. He ended up losing that fight, and as he explained, had he won the fight, champion's clause kicks in. So you would have had to stick around. Loses the fight. Now he's a free agent. This is something that Coker has done. Scott Coker, of course, from, you know, back in the day with Strikeforce. But remember, not that long ago, Rory left the UFC, signed with Bellator, had that big reveal. Remember that? Showed up at that event. I believe it was in California. Might have been San Diego, if memory serves me correct. This was in August of 2016. Had to take some time off because of the nose. Came back in May of 2017, beat Paul Daly in his debut, Bellator 179, then beat Douglas Lima via unanimous decision. That's when he won the belt. Then moved up to 185, lost to Giger Mousasi. That did not go well. Then had the draw against John Fitch, and that's when we started to think maybe he doesn't have the fire that he once did. Remember, he had that very memorable post-fight interview where he talked about not wanting to hurt people and speaking to God. Everyone was wondering if he was done, if he was going to retire right then and there in the midst of the Bellator Welterweight Grand Prix. But they made him come back relatively soon. He agreed to it, of course. Days later, put out a statement saying that he was ready to go. Ended up fighting Neiman Gracie at Madison Square Garden in June of this past year, beat Gracie, and then fought Lima again in the finale of the Grand Prix, lost to Lima and lost his belt. And that's what led to him becoming a free agent. And I've said this time and again. In fact, I wrote this in my weekly column, which was posted this morning. PFL needs to make a big splash in 2020. it's, I don't want to say do or die for them, but they need to switch things up. I have said that they need to have 90% of the roster change for next season. It's too much of the same. It feels the same. You don't have fighters and characters that people are emotionally invested in. You just need to freshen things up. And how do you freshen things up? You get big names like Rory McDonald. Now, those names cost money, so you have to be smart. You also have to find young studs. But you got Akayla Harrison now, and I think there's no intrigue in her fighting at 155 again, which she told me on Monday. That's why I advocated for the Clarissa Shields super fight. Now you got something people are talking about. An MMA boxing two-part series? Interesting. Different. Don't be beholden to the tournament. Now you got a guy like Rory McDonald. All right, who's next? I know Gegard Mousasi's deal is coming up. You go for him too? Might be a little too similar to the Bellator approach of a couple of years ago. Be aggressive. Look for the names out there. Get the diamonds in the rough. Get the prospects. And now we're talking. So this is step one. We'll see what happens. I know they were aggressive in trying to get Chris Cyborg. It didn't work out for them. We'll see if they're able to get anyone else. Appreciate Rory McDonald stopping by. And of course, the final PFL event of the year goes down on December 31st. The 2019 Professional Fighters League season concludes with 6 world title fights at their biggest event of the year. What is this, TST? Some New Year's music?
Korean music.
This makes no sense.
I know, but come on.
The South Korea event is a UFC. Yeah, but I mean,
yeah,
it's just...
Just go with it.
You could have given me like some odd lang sign or, you know, some...
Nah, just go with it.
If we're being honest, we... Wait for it. Drop the ball. Do you get it? We dropped the ball with this one. Do you get it?
Just talk about PFL, please.
The PFL Championship. New Year's Eve, New York City, Madison Square Garden. 6 $1 million belts on the line. Who will be the 6th champions crown? It'll be a rematch between Kayla Harrison, who we spoke to on Monday, and Larissa Pacheco. With $1 million and the world championship on the line. Big time stuff. It's fun. The ball doesn't drop until the PFL belts are raised. Don't miss the biggest night in PFL. The action starts at 7 p.m. Eastern. Watch it only on ESPN2. And by the way, before we get to our next guest, Alima Leigh McFarlane, who is the reigning defending Bellator women's flyweight champion. If you're an MMA fan, Saturday morning on the platform that Chael and I built, ESPN Plus, you got the event in South Korea, Frankie Edgar, Korean Zombie, Cyril Gane returning as well, Doo Choi against Charles Jourdain. That's very early on Saturday morning. And then Saturday night, it's the second Bellator event of the weekend. And this is the big one in Honolulu, headlined by Kate Jackson versus Hawaii's own Alima Leigh McFarlane for the Bellator Women's Flyweight Championship. It's always a pleasure to talk to Alima Leigh McFarlane. She's kind enough to join us right now on the program. Aloha, Alima Leigh.
Aloha, Ariel. Pehe'oi.
Yes. It's great to talk to you, and I don't know, what does that mean? Thank you for having me? Does it mean that?
No, it just means how are you?
Oh, okay. Well, I'm doing great. Thank you for asking. Of course, this whole weekend, much like last year's show, built around you. Could you tell me what's the difference in the feeling this time around? Does it feel as big? Does it feel different because you went through it all over again?
You know, it definitely feels a lot more mellow than last year. Which is understandable. Last year was crazy. You know, it was the first time we did it. And yeah, so it's a lot more mellow this year, but I like it. You know, it's just less pressure, more chill.
Does it feel less stressful? Like less people coming up to you for tickets, maybe less people asking you to do stuff? Like maybe now it's just old hat. You've been there, the first one's out of the way. Less stress on your shoulders.
Yes, for sure. A lot less stress. But there are still people asking for tickets.
And oh, my gosh.
Asking me dumb questions. Yeah, yeah. But that's never going to go away.
Right.
But, yeah, for sure, less pressure and less stress overall.
That comes with being, you know, the star of the show and the face of the whole thing. By the way, before we actually get into the weekend and everything, I just wanted to get your reaction because you have fought on cards with Rory McDonald before, and you, like him, were one of the faces of the organization. What's your reaction to him leaving Bellator to go sign with PFL?
Well, I found out this morning via your Instagram, and, you know, I wasn't super surprised. You know, I heard the PFL is paying really well to, you know, big stars. So Yeah, I mean, I was a little butthurt, honestly, because I thought he liked Bellator, and I thought, you know, he had a good relationship with them. But I don't know, you know, maybe there's a backstory to this. I don't know the details. But, you know, whatever, I support fighters, whatever they think is best for them.
Well, one of the reasons why I was curious to get your take on it is you are very proud to be a Bellator fighter, and I think you fly that flag mm-hmm. with a lot of pride. So I'm not surprised to hear that reaction. Like, is it fair to say, like, you almost take it a little bit personally? Like, why didn't you want to re-sign with us, or why didn't you want to stick around?
Yeah, I guess. But then, you know, it's like, of course, I'm super proud to be Bellator because this is my home. This is where I started with. Rory, on the other hand, you know, he started with the UFC and has fought for a ton of different organizations. So that's why I'm not, like, super butthurt about it. But I am like, all right, bye, Rory. See you later.
Wow.
No, but it's not as if me and him were homies or anything. Like, we talked maybe once. When we had to film something together, that was it. So, again, wherever he thinks is best, the best place, the best fit for him, more power to him. Good luck.
So this is your second fight of the year. You fought in April, had that really fun fight against Veda Arteaga. You won via TKO, and things are going well. You're 10-0. Like I said, face of Bellator, still the champ, all that stuff and more. But I read recently via a story on FanSided that – and I want to get your take on this and know if it's 100% accurate. Is it true that you actually considered quitting MMA before that last fight? And if so, why?
Oh, it was actually before this fight.
Oh.
So, yeah, this last camp that I had. It was really weird. Like, this was mentally the biggest breakdown I had during a camp. And, I mean, every camp you have your breakdowns, right? But this was kind of the worst, where I was like, I almost called up Rich then and were like, I don't want to fight anymore. It was just a really weird place for me. I was just frustrated with how camp was going for me. You know, my body wasn't healing like I wanted it to. The weight wasn't coming off. I was getting my ass kicked. And so, I was just kind of over it. And then... within 24 hours, I was fine. Like, the next day, I was totally fine. I turned it around. It was kind of weird. This is for sure the weirdest headspace that I've been in for a fight.
Have you ever felt that way before?
No, not like seriously. You know, again, every camp brings its own challenges. And, you know, when you're like, F this, I don't want to, you know, train today. But this was the first time where I was like, I don't want to fight.
Wow.
I'm over this. It was weird.
Did you? I know you said you didn't actually call Rich, but in your mind, were you done? Did you get to that point?
Yeah, I mean, I was just sitting on the side of the gym, like crying. I had just finished my Shark Tank, you know, where someone's rotating in on you every couple minutes, and I got my ass kicked in that one. That was like the second day in a row that I didn't do good in practice, and so yeah, I was just crying, sitting down, like, and none of my teammates have ever seen me like that before. Like, I rarely cry, so they were kind of all concerned and they didn't know what to say, and I was just like, I'm done, guys, like, I'm done fighting. And then like I said, I ended up going to ceremony that night with my sweat lodge family and prayed on it, and you know, just felt a lot better afterwards. And then yeah, the next day I came back and I had a super solid rest of the week. So, yeah, it was just one of those temporary breakdowns.
Okay, so
but
just...
I pulled through it and, yeah, it was fine.
How long ago was this?
This was beginning of November.
Okay, so a little over a month ago, a month and a half or so ago. And one thing that I didn't understand was you said you went to a ceremony with your sweat lodge family. What is the ceremony and what's the sweat lodge family?
Okay, so it's kind of like my version of church, but it's a sweat lodge ceremony that I go to every week, and it's a Lakota tradition. And so it's out on the reservation, in one of the reservations in San Diego. And I've been doing this for several years now. And, yeah, it's just, like I said, it's my version of church, basically. And I just, where they bring hot rocks in and pour water over them, and it steams up, and you know, like a sweat lodge.
Okay.
I feel like everybody knows what it is.
I've never heard of a sweat lodge. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm not like a pro athlete, so I'm not exposed to that.
Oh, no. Actually, maybe a lot of people aren't, but it's a Native American tradition from the Plains and from the Plains Indians. And it just put a lot of things into perspective for me. And, you know, I told myself that if this was all that I was complaining about, that, you know, oh, poor me, I got beat up in practice, or like, oh, poor me, you know, the weight isn't coming off as fast as I want it to, then I live a pretty good life if that's all I have to worry about, you know.
Any concerns that this will pop up again, that this might be a reoccurring thing now in your career?
No, in fact, I know it's going to pop up again, but now it doesn't concern me because, again, after putting everything into perspective, it shows me, I actually enjoy the adversity that each camp and each fight presents, because I know that I can get over, you know, I can overcome it. So, for example, you know, I also was facing a couple injuries this camp, but I've done that in other, I've had the same injury in previous camps, so I know that I can pull through it, you know. And now I'm like, okay, well, this is the biggest mental breakdown that I've had yet, so I know that in the future, if it happens again, then I can pull through it. So, yeah, it's not a concern anymore for me, and I know that it'll probably resurface, because I feel like that's just human nature, but now I know how to manage it.
And how's the weight coming off now? How's it doing?
Oh, good. I'm actually ahead of schedule from my last fight.
So. Wow.
Yeah, which is crazy because this was the biggest that I ever started a camp at. And so, yeah, I just, again, that's me pushing the boundaries. I'm like, what's the biggest I can get and still cut the weight safely?
The last time. So the last time you were in Hawaii and the scene was so great and it was even emotional with the walkout. And you're paying tribute to your state and your people, your island. Are you going to do something similar to that? Maybe even more grandiose than that? What do you have planned? What could you tell us about what you have planned?
Oh, for sure. So I'm not sure if you're up to date with the political situation here in Hawaii, but there is currently a huge standoff up on Mauna Kea, which is something that I've actively been participating in. I've flown home several times to help protect our mountain, our most sacred mountain, Mauna Kea, which the government and big developers are trying to build the world's biggest, largest telescope on sacred Hawaiian land. So right now, again, the political climate in Hawaii is pretty tense. You know, Hawaiians are actually, we're in the midst of the biggest political uprising, or Hawaiian uprising, in modern day history.
Wow.
And you know, so I'm gonna definitely pay tribute to what's going on right now, and represent my Hawaiian culture and my Hawaiian people, the Lahui o Hawaii.
Possible it might even be more emotional than the first time with that backdrop.
Oh, 100%. I'm pretty sure I'm going to cry harder than I did last year.
Oh, my. And is that okay? Like, are you able to, I mean, last time it was fine, but getting super emotional before a cage fight sometimes could be problematic. Does that worry you?
No, because like I said before, too, you know, I've already been through it once, so I know how to handle it.
Okay.
And I'm emotional before all my fights, and I'm like crying during all my walkouts.
There's nothing wrong with crying, by the way. I've been disparaged for being a crier. I think crying is healthy, and it's good to be in touch with your emotional
side.
It
is. Thank you. You need to spread that more.
Okay,
I will. Get rid of that. Yeah.
That stigma.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. And so this is 125. Of course, this is another fight defending your title. Right now, Bellator doing good things at 145. You're doing your thing at 125, but there's that little gap there at 135. Do you have any, as we were talking about the weight, I was wondering, do you have any interest in, if this continues to be just a stress, a burden on you, testing the waters at 135?
Oh, totally. I mean, I'm already prepared. If I am to win and they give me the mic, then I would love to go for a, I would love to, you know, yell out for a Bantamweight division to be open. And because I want to go for that champ status. You know, none of the women in Bellator have it. And so I really want to push for that. And I know that there's a lot of featherweights who would drop down. There's a lot of flyweights who would go up. You know, we're signing more and more women. You're seeing more fighters coming over from other promotions. My own teammate, Liz, you know, she's looking for a home right now. And so, trying to open up a bantamweight division in Bellator is definitely probably like my top priority, right? Or like, you know, after this fight, obviously, but that's on my list of goals.
So you win on Saturday, you're getting on the mic and you are demanding this. You are saying that's what I want next.
Yes.
All right.
And I also don't want to cut weight anymore.
Okay. So are you done at 125?
No. I'm not done, but it would be nice to switch it up every now and then, you know?
Okay. And have you already pitched this idea behind the scenes? And if so, are they receptive to it?
I have a little bit. I've planted the seed and they haven't given me any firm answer, but, I'm keeping my fingers crossed because that same thing happened when I was like, we need a Bellator Hawaii and they shot it down. They're like, it's never going to happen. And then look what happened, you know? So I'm definitely going to keep pushing it. And, keep my fingers crossed.
You mentioned, your good friend and training partner, Liz Carmouche. When you found out, not that she was released, but the way in which she was released 4 months after the title fight while doing PR community relations work for the UFC in Washington, how did you feel about this? How did you react?
Well, I was super shocked. And to be honest, I was really pissed, again, with the nature in which it happened because, you know, not only was Liz out there on her own dime, but she had also missed my last week of sparring. You know, she's my main training partner. And it was my last hard week of sparring because she needed to go and do this promo for the UFC out there. And so, yeah, I was just like, how are they going to do her dirty like that? But at the silver lining to all of it is that I thought it made the company look really bad. And Liz handled it like a true professional. You know, when I saw her, her response to everything that happened, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so Liz. So, I think in the end it was a good thing because she needs to be somewhere. She needs to be with someone or a promotion that's going to, treat her like a human being, treat her with respect and, you know, appreciate her and all that she's done for the sport.
Do you think she'll sign with Bellator?
I hope so. That's my dream. That's totally.
But what? I'm sure you have insight. Yeah, what insight do you have? Is it close?
I heard that they were talking and negotiating, I believe. But I haven't asked her. In fact, she's on a plane right now. She's coming over to Hawaii right now.
Oh.
But yeah. So I mean, I think that's pretty good. You know, she's coming out to the Bellator fights and. And I heard that they're in communication, but I don't know the details.
Okay. And if she does sign, are you going to ask for the first fight against her? Because you told us last time that's the dream fight, right?
It is the dream fight, but I want that to be the dream fight for my, like, retirement.
Oh.
For the end of my career.
Okay.
Yeah. So I wouldn't want it to be the first fight. I'd want it to be, like, at the end of my contract.
Okay. All right. But she's probably going to retire before you. No?
I don't think so, man. Like, yeah, Liz is... I feel like she's a lifer. I, on the other hand, I want to maybe sign one more or fight one more contract after this one is up and then, you know, see what the next chapter brings me. But I feel like if Liz doesn't retire around the same time as me, she's definitely going to fight longer than me.
Okay. Wow. And how many fights left on this deal?
I believe after this fight, I have one more?
Oh.
Something like that. Yeah.
Time to get paid.
So I actually have a year, so it's like the end of next year.
That means time to get paid.
Yes.
Yes.
It's always time to get paid.
That is true. Could I ask, before I let you go, when we fight in Hawaii, I remember last time you had like a big barbecue or something afterwards on the Sunday after. What is the traditional thing to eat? Like, how do you celebrate when you're back home? What is the plan? Because it seemed like an amazing time. I was a little bit jealous. I think some of my colleagues, Casey and Esther, were there. How do you actually How do you celebrate this?
Okay, so it's a luau. So like the great Moro, he made it a tagline. Let the luau begin. We put on a big Hawaiian luau at my family's house. And we have traditional Hawaiian food. We have Hawaiian music, hula dancing. Everybody was really big fans of the kava shots that we were giving out. Kava, or the ava drink, is a traditional Polynesian drink that we, you know, it's kind of like our equivalent to alcohol. And so everybody were really big fans of that. We had a little bar there. My sponsors, Anheuser-Busch, Michelob Ultra, they were all there providing the drinks. So yeah, it's just a big party celebration to show my appreciation for Bellator and, you know, for everybody that came and supported me for my fight. So we're definitely going to do it again. I've already sent the invite over to Kate via Gareth Davies.
Wow.
And and I've invited several of the fighters. You know, last year my former opponent Alejandra Lada and Team Grasso, they all came. So yeah, it's just a good time, you know.
I'm just looking through my email here. I don't see an invitation.
Maybe. Well, you aren't here in the island.
Oh, okay. So it's only people who are there.
Oh, and my manager just notified me that he invited you.
Hmm. That one must have gone lost in the mail. I don't see it.
Yeah, aren't you on vacation?
Nah, listen, these are clearly not, because I'm doing an interview with you right now, but it is a big week and it's very exciting stuff. And lastly, very exciting that you were featured in the Wall Street Journal, and I learned something new about you. Your pre-fight pump music, as they put it, is a Canadian band. I am a proud Canadian. I've never heard of this band before, but I need to do my research on them. A Tribe Called Red, a Canadian electronic group. That's a real band, a Tribe Called Red, and it's a Canadian band, really? Why them?
Yes. So they're Native American.
Oh, and, okay.
Yeah, so they take traditional Native American, you know, chants and songs, and they remix them. And, oh my gosh, it's the best pump-up music ever. I've walked out to them. Pretty much at every fight, I've walked out to them, except for the Hawaii fights. I have my own, you know, Hawaiian music that I come out to. But yeah, they're the best. A Tribe Called Red. I've seen them live like 3 times too. Whoa. Whenever they come to San Diego.
Okay. I will check them out. Thank you very much for doing this, Ali Malay. I know you're very busy. Everyone's pulling you in a million different directions there. So it's great to catch up with you, and I wish you the best on Saturday night. Mahalo.
Thank you. Mahalo, Ariel. You're the best.
Thank you. There she is. The Bellator women's flyweight champion. You can argue one of the faces of Bellator. They promote her very well, and she's very proud to be a member of Bellator, and I think that's great that they have someone like that who flies the flag and gets emotional about someone like Rory McDonald leaving or her friend Liz Carmouche getting released. That's good. That's good for the brand. It's good to have someone. And she's a big draw in Hawaii. This is her second time going to Hawaii with her leading the charge, and it's Bellator 236 on Saturday that she'll be headlining opposite Kate Jackson, Derek Campos versus AJ McKee, also on that card. And there's a bunch of other notable names as well. And I told you about the Josh Barnett card on Friday for the troops. So exciting stuff there. Before we get to New York Rick and wrap up the weekend, let me tell you about our good friends over at Whoop. Is this South Korean music as well?
Yeah.
This is like pop music or something?
Yeah, K-pop.
K-pop. Is that a...
It's a thing.
That's a thing. All right. Anyway, as you know, TST, we're all looking for ways to improve our health, whether it's being smarter about how we train, making a better effort to get more sleep, or simply thinking more about our body's overall wellness. In fact, TST, on Monday night, I was at my neighbor's house. I've talked about these neighbors before. 4 teenage kids. Some people gave me some flack for saying that I was texting with one of them about the KSI Logan Paul, but all 4 boys very much remind me of me and my brothers, and we have a great time talking about sports. And one of them, the oldest, actually said to me, I kid you not, TST, check out this new thing that I'm wearing on my wrist. And I said, what is that? And he said, it's called a Whoop. How about that? And was telling me all about it. I said, you should have used my code, but he bought it already. Anyway, back to Whoop. They are our sponsor today. Whoop is a fitness tracker that goes beyond counting steps and provides 24/7 fitness, sleep, and recovery insights personalized to you. There's nothing else like it on the market. Our lives cause different levels of stress on our bodies, from training to work and our lives at home, or doing podcasts with TST as he chooses this very unique music. Whoop understands that and quantifies it for you into actionable metrics. With Whoop, you'll get a daily recovery score that looks at biometrics like heart rate variability, resting heart rate, and your sleep performance to let you know how ready your body is to perform. You're also given insight into the intensity of your training in real time and track how strenuous your day is, as well as get next level sleep insight with suggested sleep times based on how strenuous your day is, track your sleep stages and cycles, and see how much sleep you got compared to how much you actually need. Whether you're looking to be smarter about your fitness, better about your sleep, or be more mindful of your body's recovery, Whoop has you covered. Don't wait for New Year's resolutions. They're a sham. Right now, start being more in tune with your body. So if you're looking to be smarter about how you train, sleep, or recover, Whoop is offering our audience 15% off. I bet my neighbor wishes he waited for this. 15% off with my code Ariel, A-R-I-E-L. Go to whoop.com. That's W-H-O-O-P.com and use the code Ariel, A-R-I-E-L at the checkout and optimize your performance with Whoop. Support them because they support us. Now, let's wrap this up. As Elimelech just alluded to, this is our last Wednesday podcast of 2019. There's only a couple weeks left. But I just want to let everyone know, next Monday, no live Helwani show, but we are going to have a end-of-decade roundtable with Mark Raimondi and Brett Okamoto that will be in video form, but also in audio form. So it'll be on our ESPN MMA YouTube page, but also on this here podcast feed. That'll be Monday, so we won't be leaving you hanging on Monday. That's December 23rd. We'll be off the week of December 30th, but back on January 6th for the 2019 Helwani Knows Awards, and then back to the regular scheduled Wednesday shows on January 8th. So we're just really missing out on 1 week, but I just wanted to make mention of that. For now, let's end the year the way we should with New York Rick, who I believe is in attendance. New York Rick, are you there?
Did you get me? Hello, my friend.
Yes, I got you now.
Okay.
Loud and clear. Welcome back to the program, sir. You're back from Las Vegas. First, let's talk about the road show. What did you think?
Yeah, another great turnout, another great event.
There were some complaints about your scoring. People thought that you were a little slow on the draw. You were giving Ioana points that she didn't deserve. Any response?
No. Slow on the draw? How dare you?
Meh.
Tallying this difficult mathematics was daunting, but I did it masterfully. And no, Ioana deserved those points. I would like to throw hands with anybody who had a problem.
TST, what did you think of it?
You know, I was telling you the other day, I'm not a huge fan of the way that you design the rounds. I can understand how New York Rick would get confused.
This is so classic TST. Like, here New York Rick comes, he says it was great. First thing he says, criticism. You know, for a minimalist, for someone who's supposed to be all, like, positive and happy-go-lucky, it's always very doom and gloom with you, I have to say.
I just want you to be your best.
Tell me, you can't just throw out a comment like that and not actually back it up with any kind of examples. What's confusing about it?
I mean, so like you say, I just feel like the rounds should be one trip, that like everyone gets a turn, that's a round. Okay, that was round one, now we go to round two. But no, then there's like three questions in a round and then suddenly...
It's a four-pack.
And then suddenly it's like, oh, the thing is over, we're doing the name as many female fighters as you can.
No, there was the newlywed section.
Yes, I know. I just thought it was very hard to follow. I was there. I had the plans in front of me, and I couldn't follow it.
Is this fair criticism, New York Rick?
You know, he supported me, so it's going to be hard to go against TST in this regard. After all the slander that's been thrown my way.
Listen, I'm not complaining. I thought you were great.
Oh, thank you.
I'm just saying this is what the people said.
I'm switching back sides. Troy, what are you talking about?
Yeah, talking about, bro?
Eric, we took a photo.
Yes.
In Las Vegas.
We did. It was great. Now, I have a feeling I know why TST is a little bit, you know, ornery on this Wednesday. Still bummed. The look on his face, New York Rick, when Colby Covington lost.
Yeah.
It was despair, gutted, down, depressed, disappointed, sad.
Yeah, I know the feeling well. One of my favorite fighters, one of my heroes, has taken quite a few of those, and I recognize those feelings.
But this youngster had never been to a UFC event. Heck, never even been to Vegas. Never even been there. And so here he is watching his favorite fight, loses. TSC, tell us, A, how you were feeling, honestly, on that Saturday night, and how you feel several days later.
Yeah, watching your heroes go down like that is always rough. I felt it in the fifth round. You know, obviously I didn't realize that Colby had a broken jaw at the end of the third round. In the fifth round, when Usman got him with a punch that took Colby to the ground, I was like, at that point, I had to look away because I knew where this was going, that it wasn't going to end positively for me and my guy Colby. And then when the final knockout happened, he lost, and the crowd just erupted in favor of Kamaru Usman and in opposition to Colby Covington, knowing like the entire world was against me in that moment and seeing my guy just laying on the ground all bloodied up, it hurt. It felt like I got punched in the gut. It felt like I had a broken jaw.
Wow. And do you feel as though after the fact he isn't getting the credit that he deserves for the way he fought or fighting with a broken jaw because people have such disdain for him, they hate him so much that they are kicking him while he's down?
Oh, of course, yeah. I mean, all the people who are against him are going to say, oh, this is exactly what he deserved. He had this coming all along. Usman gave him what we all wanted. And listen, like, guy fought a hell of a fight. 5 rounds against the champion with the whole world seemingly against you, gave it all he had, fought with a broken jaw for crying out loud. He was impressive. Dude was a dog. I hope he gets another shot at it pretty soon.
I like that. I think he deserves all the credit. I think that he is not getting the credit because people hate him. And he's asked for this, right? He is not asking for sympathy. He has never asked for sympathy. This is part of what he signed up for. He wanted to be the most hated man in the sport. He became the most hated man in the sport. And with that comes, you know, people kicking you while you're down. But if you're being honest, if you're taking a step back, if you're actually assessing it without any emotion, the man fought a great fight. He was winning the first 2 rounds, in my opinion. And had he not broken his jaw, maybe he wins that fight. Now, the big question coming out of that fight is, all right, where does Kamaru Usman go from here? I think there are two questions that you can ask. Who will he fight or who should he fight? So, New York Rick, let me ask you this. Who will Kamaru Usman fight next? Not who should he fight next. Who do you think he will, in fact, defend that title against next?
I think he will fight Leon Edwards. I think he will fight Leon Edwards.
Who should he fight then?
And I think he should fight Leon Edwards, actually.
Not Masvidal?
No. I do think that Leon has deserved this shot. Now, granted, I definitely don't think anybody would have an argument against Masvidal. I think his resume is as impressive as anybody in that division. But I do think Leon's been kind of waiting in line for this opportunity, and they've been skipping and skipping and skipping him. So I believe he will fight Leon Edwards, and I believe he should fight Leon Edwards. And I do think the Masvidal fight will be there no matter what. Like, Masvidal will be there in 6 months, will be there in a year. That opportunity won't pass by, whereas you can get Leon Edwards out of the way now.
So who does Masvidal fight?
That's a great question. It seems like, and, you know, Dana White spoke to Brett Okamoto in Las Vegas, it seems like Masvidal is kind of waiting to see what happens with Conor and Cowboy, rightfully so and smartly so. And I wouldn't be too surprised if all of a sudden Masvidal and Conor McGregor have a meeting sometime this year.
Okay, so I think the best case scenario for the UFC is Conor McGregor wins, calls out Jorge Masvidal, you do that fight in July, right?
Yep.
And then, of course, that frees up Leon Edwards to fight Kamaru Usman. Hey, Kamaru Usman and his manager were both campaigning for Leon Edwards, so I don't think they should be upset unless they're playing games, which I think they're kind of playing games because, let's be honest, we all know Jorge Masvidal is the bigger fight. But, hey, they have a history with Edwards, and he's won eight in a row, and it's hard to deny him that. And it would be a nice story that the guy who kind of got screwed over this year after the whole thing with Masvidal backstage didn't really materialize for much for him, materialized for a lot. You know, for Masvidal, became a huge star as a result of that. Hey, he gets a title shot in the end. Cool. I think everyone's happy. And oh, by the way, that would also free up Tyron Woodley to maybe finally have that grudge match with Colby Covington. So I think that's the best case scenario. But what if Conor loses? You can't do Masvidal Conor, right?
Can you not?
Nah, I don't think they're.
Why not?
I mean, I think
give me one legitimate reason why not.
Okay, you could do it because everything's crazy in this sport. But I think if Conor loses, better chance for Conor to fight Diaz to do the trilogy. Nate Diaz, that is.
Wouldn't mind that fight. Don't see any obstacle for Connor and
if Connor
Masvidal
loses,
to be made.
You want to see if Connor loses at 170 to Donald Cerrone, you want to see him fight Jorge Masvidal at 170?
Don't think anybody would be opposed to it.
But do you want to see it?
Do I want to see it? I'd see Connor fight anybody, and I'd see Masvidal fight anybody. Let's be honest about what the stakes are here. Neither one of these guys is the best in their division. I think we can objectively state this plainly. Neither one of these guys is the best in their division. So if we're going to make fights where we're not fighting for anything, where there is not a meritocracy, where they are not trying to climb the ranks, I don't give a F if they've lost their last two or five. That is a fun fight, and I don't care. So yeah, I'd be 100% down for Connor versus Masvidal.
Now, off a loss.
Now, I do think Masvidal is entering territory where title shot is in the conversation no matter what, just because of the strength of the resume. But I don't think that that's what he's after. I don't think that that's what he's chasing. Clearly not. So no, I have no problem. Conor McGregor, win or lose Masvidal, I have no issue with it.
This is crazy.
What?
Masvidal's on a winning streak. He just beat Nate Diaz.
So what?
I think if Conor loses at 170, look, I think the only thing I don't like about the Cerrone fight is the fact that it's at 170. I think it was a miscalculation on his part. I think the fact, when you consider the fact that Donald Cerrone historically doesn't show up in the big fights, when you consider the fact that he has trouble making 155, doesn't miss weight, but it is a strain, it is a struggle to make 155, you are alleviating pressure off his shoulders by not making him cut to 155, so he's more comfortable fighting 170. This is dangerous. You're playing with fire here. And then, okay, he loses to him, and you're going to do Masvidal Connor? I mean, that's just crazy talk.
You have yet to present me a reason why not.
It just doesn't make sense. First of all, if Connor loses to Cerrone at 170, he should not stick around at 170. He should go back to 155. And I don't think Masvidal is going down to 155. I mean, I think for the right money, he'll do it. But Connor needs to go back down to 155 if he loses
this fight
to Cerrone.
This seems to be something that you are – the conversation that you just – or the point you just made about Connor needing to go down to 155 for the fight with Cerrone makes me think that your mind is on Connor as a 155-er.
Yours isn't? If he loses.
No, I don't think he has a weight class. I think – and he said this in the past. And interestingly enough, I was looking up some old Connor quotes. He kind of came up with a belt before Nate Diaz did. He said that people are fighting for the McGregor belt, and he's 100% right. Connor McGregor is a money weight, and I don't think there's any discount for fights for him at 155 or 170, and I have no problem coming off a loss. There is zero stakes in this Cowboy and Connor fight. There are zero stakes. Neither one of those guys is going after a title shot. And
what are you
Conor
talking
McGregor,
about? Conor is going after a title shot.
You know
that he plays by a different set of rules.
He's going after a title shot because he's Conor McGregor. He's not going after a title shot because he's climbing the ranks. So there is no advancing. There is no climbing the ranks. I couldn't care less who his next opponent is, and Masvidal sounds like a great dance partner.
I'm just happy that you didn't say I could care less.
No,
that's one of my
pet peeve. Hate it.
Big pet peeve. All right. We'll have plenty of time to talk about all that. So we got your thoughts on Usman. Covington Woodley would be fun though, right?
Love it.
Yeah.
I mean, that has to happen. And I've been saying that for a long, like that fight needed to be made a year and a half ago. That is the fight to make.
Yes. So that's why I think if Usman fights Edwards, it opens things up for Woodley and Covington. I mean, Covington's going to be out for a minute, and maybe Woodley doesn't want to wait, but it would be fun at some point in 2020 to see that fight. Now, I recall having you on our radio show on Saturday afternoon before 2:45, and correct me if I'm wrong, because a lot has happened since then, but I recall you being very confident about the fact that Max Holloway was going to defeat Alexander Volkanovski in the first round, and if memory serves me correct, I almost feel like you said it was going to be like easy, like it was going to be one-sided. Am I crazy here? Am I dreaming of things, or you did actually say that?
No, it wasn't me. Must have been somebody else.
Was it Lance Armstrong? Who was it?
Yeah, it was somebody doing an impersonation, I believe, but not even a good one.
Right.
Not even a particularly good one. Yes, I was very confident in Max. I thought that the fight would look very similar to the Frankie Edgar fight, where he'd be able to keep Volkanovski at range, and boy, Volkanovski showed his tool bag is extremely deep. And not only that, but the game plan that he came in with, the ability to stick to it, the instructions from his corner, everything was picture perfect. And that was an eye-opening performance, I think, for Volkanovski.
Yeah, that was great. I mean, that was...
You can't do it better than that, period.
No.
You just cannot do it better than that.
So because it's one of those fights where you see 4 rounds to 1 or 5 to none, and you say to yourself, wow, that was a one-sided fight. But it wasn't really a one-sided fight. You know what I'm saying? Like, it didn't feel like a drubbing.
It was a very clear fight. There was no doubt at the end of it. Unlike, you know, let's say heading into the fifth round of Usman and Covington, there's uncertainty. We don't know who's winning that. It's very close. In Volkanovski and Holloway, there was no uncertainty there. It was going to be Volkanovski if he was able to hang on to it. But the rounds were close, and Max seemed to have some momentum at times. But Volkanovski fought such an incredible fight. It was something to behold. And then, you know, leading into the main event, the pay-per-view had a ton of momentum at that time.
So then how do you feel about immediate rematch?
I like the idea just on the merit of Max Holloway's career at featherweight. It is a bit rough to justify just because if you do factor in the Dustin Poirier loss, like Max has been a little bit up and down recently. But I do think because of how long he's reigned at featherweight, it would be justified the same way Jose Aldo got to run it back with Max, when he was dethroned. And I also think it's probably the best fight from a storyline perspective that Volkanovski is going to get in his first title defense. I don't see a better option, if he wants to actually, you know, headline a pay-per-view and make some money. That's probably the best way to do it.
Yeah, there are options out there. Korean Zombie fighting this weekend at 145, and he's coming off a nice win over Renato Moicano. Zabit is out there. Yair is out there, as Chael calls him, Yair. Brian Ortega is going to come back at some point, but I don't feel like there's any, like, Zabit has the strongest case, but sure. I don't feel like there's any momentum behind the idea of him fighting for the belt just yet. I think he needs another high-profile fight against another top contender. Calvin Kattar wasn't that guy. And so I think right now, Holloway's that guy. And it's so interesting because Holloway was champion for around the same amount of time as Tyron Woodley. Woodley lost the belt. No one was talking about immediate rematch. Holloway loses the belt. Everyone's talking about immediate rematch. And to me, the big takeaway is, as I wrote this morning, sometimes it pays to just be a company man. And I'm not, like, both guys deserved it.
I agree with that. It certainly in that case, being a company man helps. But I also think there's a difference in terms of fan favorites. You know, Max Holloway, clearly from everything he says at the presser, opens the presser calling out Daniel Cormier, you're eating everything I ever worked for. I mean, you know, Max just hits the notes, and we saw the message on Instagram yesterday to Alex Volkanovski. Max endears himself to fans in a way that I just don't think Tyron Woodley ever did. Now, I would be one of those people that was highly in favor of a rematch between Usman and Woodley. It never materialized, but I do understand that I think I'm in the minority there. I think that Holloway being a fan favorite, and as we outlined, the options being limited in terms of clear-cut contenders, I do think that it's going to work in Max's favor.
Yeah, no one does it better than Max. I mean, the Instagram post that you mentioned, the guy is just somehow, some way, he finds a way to just like hit the perfect note every single time. It's before the fight, after the fight. It's really impressive, and his team deserves a lot of credit. They don't like to take the credit. They put him in the forefront, but he has a really great team surrounding him who are all about him, making him into the best Max Holloway possible. Please tell me, okay, we disagreed about the Cerrone, Masvidal, yep, McGregor. Please tell me you're not into Henry Cejudo, Jose Aldo for the belt.
I am not.
Okay.
I am not. And I think something that is interesting that I'm seeing here is, like, we're not giving Marlon Moraes credit for a win. I know it was close.
No credit.
I know it was controversial. I know there's people that scored it for Jose Aldo, but he did not win. His hand was not raised at the end of the fight. And I understand treating it as if he did, giving him a big fight. But I don't understand the idea that all of a sudden Marlon Moraes is the loser of this fight. It just does not make sense to me. At worst, it should be they could run it back, whatever the case may be. But it seems like nobody is factoring in the fact that Marlon Moraes won this fight. And you know what? It was close enough that you can't complain about that. You really can't. I understand if you scored it for Jose Aldo. I completely understand that. But to pretend and completely discredit that Marlon Moraes did not win that fight, I just don't understand. I don't understand. When did we start tossing out wins and losses? Now, whatever you think of judging, whatever you think of that specific fight, understand. But Marlon Moraes won. His hand was raised, and it should be treated that way.
I couldn't agree more. And in fact, I would say, you know, I like the Cejudo gimmick. I think it's fun.
Yeah.
It's different. His last video reminded me of like a 1985 WWF promo, a vignette, if you will. This is a bad look, man, to come out on the Sunday after a fight and call it the guy who lost. And it was close. It wasn't a robbery. You know, I had it for Aldo, but, you know, you watch it again, to your point, like Marlon is not getting enough credit for this fight. It was super close. And to call it the guy who lost, to call it a guy who's 0-1 now at 135, it's just a bad look, especially when you got Piotr Jan on the same card looking great, especially when you got Aljamain looking great, recovering and soon to be cleared for the wrist injury. When you got Corey Sandhagen out there, this is not a good look.
Two things on that. One, I don't think anybody wants that smoke with Piotr Jan. That guy is intense. And second of all, maybe Cody Garbrandt wants that smoke. But second, it's straight from the Henry Cejudo playbook. You know, it's contenders knocking each other off, and then all of a sudden you're calling out Dominic Cruz, who's not even in the picture. It's straight from the Henry Cejudo playbook. I expect nothing else. Eventually, he's going to fight a contender the same way he fought Marlon. I expect that it will not be Jose Aldo, but interestingly enough, it seemed like Dana White was into that one. I hope it is not. And I hope Marlon gets respect for that win that he deserved.
And isn't it amazing that Amanda Nunes is a champion in two different weight classes and yet has no options? Like, no.
It is.
Who does she have? Irene Aldana looked amazing, and that was a great win. But is she ready for Amanda Nunes?
I don't think anybody in the division is ready for Amanda Nunes. It speaks to, A, the lack of depth in both those divisions, but also her dominance. She makes it look like nobody's ready. I think when the belt was kind of being passed along for a while, it looked like there were, you know, much more exciting matchups. Now it just seems like the Lioness is just going to continue to reign over both those divisions. It's looking bleak. They need some new talent, but I don't know where it's going to come from.
Yeah, they booked actually two featherweight fights on the February 29th card in Fairfax. Promising, nice. I don't know if Megan is ready. Felicia Spencer coming off a loss. Aspen Ladd looked solid in the last fight, especially the end. Maybe Ladd versus, I don't know, Aldana. Aldana looked great in that fight, but she's only on a 2-fight. Maybe she needs to take some time off. I'm not interested in the Clarissa Shields thing. And to be honest, I don't even think Amanda Nunes is interested in the Clarissa Shields.
She could not have been more forceful in shutting that one down.
Yeah. What do you think of my Kayla Harrison Clarissa Shields idea?
I'm more open to that. But I do have to say, I respect Clarissa Shields in the sense that she's not talking it up as if this is going to happen tomorrow, right? She's not saying, I want to fight Amanda Nunes. Let's make it happen. She's like, look, I respect her. I would need time to prepare for this. This would be a complete career change for me. If I was to do it, I would put in the work, and then I would be willing to do it. So I respect the fact that it's not just a toss away, because we've seen so many fighters talk about the idea of going over to boxing and wanting to fight Floyd Mayweather, and, you know, Bryce Mitchell saying that he's going to slap him until he can read, like that type of nonsense. Clarissa Shields is taking this as an actual potential career path, and I respect the way she's essentially handling it, but I have no interest in that at the moment. I would like to see maybe she gets down the line, and maybe she has that MMA career and has the number of fights under her belt as Kayla Harrison, and then all of a sudden maybe that's a conversation. So I won't completely shut it down, but I do appreciate also Amanda Nunes saying Jermaine Durandamy had 6 years to train her takedown defense, and she couldn't do it. What is Clarissa Shields going to do on 6 months?
I just think the idea of a two-part series, MMA, you know, one event MMA, the other event boxing, for a PFL to have their star, and I mean, Clarissa Shields, a two-time Olympic gold medalist in boxing, that's going to be tough for Kayla. But then Kayla has her judo and her MMA career. You have the selling point of two women, two-time Olympic gold medalists. Clarissa needs a bump. PFL and Kayla need a bump. I just think that makes a hell of a lot more sense. And especially when you consider the fact that Amanda isn't all that interested in it. And it reminded me a lot of the James Toney thing. And he was a lot more aggressive and was campaigning for the fight. But just seeing her there and doing interviews, like the UFC had to set that up.
Yeah.
She doesn't just waltz in there and start doing interviews. I thought that was very interesting as well. One last thing before I let you go. Immediate thoughts, biggest news of the day. Rory McDonald leaves Bellator, goes and signs with PFL. Do you like this move for Rory?
Oh, it's a fantastic move for Rory. I think, you know, the Douglas Lima fight took a little bit off the shine, a little bit off the luster of Rory. And I do think PFL has kind of needed somebody with this name recognition who is an established fighter who, you know, has held titles in major organizations before to come over and say, I'm going to, you know, make a good run at this. And we'll really see where the level of competition is that season. We'll really see, you know, with Rory being the measuring stick, how the other fighters that are in this tournament pool stack up. And I also think from Rory's career perspective, it's a great opportunity. You know, you have to assume if you're Rory McDonald that your skill set is going to be by far the tops in that division for that year. And you have an opportunity to really like cruise through, and make, you know, a cool $1 million in addition to whatever you're making on your fight purse. So, I think it makes sense for both parties. What I think will really move the needle, what I really think will change the game, is somebody who's not, you know, on the downside of their career. I think, you know, people are looking at Rory as damaged goods right now. And I think somebody who is in their prime, somebody who's a, you know, top, let's call it 5 to 15 UFC fighter, to come over to PFL and say, I'm going to take this opportunity to enter a tournament, I think that will be the real, you know, measuring stick. That will be the thing that kind of changes the game for PFL. But at the moment, this is a great option for them. And I think Rory McDonald also, this also works in his favor.
This offseason, if you will, for PFL is going to be really interesting to follow. They're going to be very aggressive. And I agree with everything you said, including that they need one of those guys as well. Now, a lot of those people aren't available,
yep,
aren't free agents. They tend to get locked up, you know,
yep,
in the midst of contracts and not even test the waters, because that's a bit of a daunting idea. But if they can get one or two of those, all right, now we're talking. And I think they need to just freshen up the roster a little bit, because it's a lot of the same from last year. So it's going to be interesting to watch that one play out. Rory's the first one. We'll see where they go from here. All right, TST, you're up.
TST's Minimalist Tip of the Week.
All right, guys. So before I get to my tip of the week, I'm having a little bit of a minimalist dilemma, and I need your guys' help.
Okay.
All right. So are you familiar with what a Yankee swap is?
No.
Either of you know?
No.
Okay. So I don't know either. But anyway, I'm going to a Yankee swap later with some folks here from ESPN. It's basically, it's not a Secret Santa, because you don't buy anything. You just kind of like re-gift something from your house and give it to someone, something that you don't want anymore. Thing is, I don't have anything that I don't want anymore. I've gotten rid of all of those things, so I have nothing to give. What do I do?
Wow, this is fascinating. This is really testing who you are internally.
I know.
I don't know what to do. And first of all, are you sure that that's what it is?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I've been told that's what it is.
You don't possess anything that you can say, you know what, I could live without this?
No.
It's all gone?
No, I've already done that. That's the whole point of this minimalism thing.
I know. Jeez.
How would
Louise.
You feel about cheating a little bit and buying something?
Oh, yeah.
How would you feel about skirting the rules? I feel like you don't have many better options.
So I should buy something rather than show up empty-handed and say, hey, well, like, I just don't own anything.
Yeah, I think that's the move.
Okay. Aero, do you agree?
I think I agree, but I feel like you're also very set on this minimalist thing. Why do I say that? New York Rick, someone went up to me on Friday at the road show and said, wouldn't it be funny if while you're in Las Vegas, you buy a bunch of cheap Vegas trinkets for TST and you give them to him? Now he's faced with the dilemma of having to be polite, accepting the gift, but also not wanting useless trinkets because he's a minimalist. And so I presented him with this idea, and he told me, believe it or not, I couldn't believe it, he told me he would refuse the gift. He would not take any of them because of his minimalist ways. So I feel like he's so tied to this gimmick that he's actually not going to go out and buy something. He's just going to show up with nothing.
This is no gimmick, Helwani.
It's
this
a
is
lifestyle.
My life. Exactly.
Yeah, gimmick lifestyle.
You have to fake it, Troy. Look, you take the gifts from Helwani, you say how much you appreciate them, and then you toss them in the bin as soon as you leave the place. And he's never coming over to the house because you have nothing there, so he's not going to come looking for it. What's he going to see when he gets there? It would just be an empty room and your trinkets, but they're actually in the trash can at the Vegas airport.
I've had to spell out to friends, family, hey, like, don't get me anything for the holidays. Get me gift cards or get me objects that are not tangible.
Meanwhile, you sent me a holiday card.
Yes, I sent you a holiday card. Yeah, for sure. I love spreading the holiday spirit.
No, that's anti-minimalist.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You could have sent me a text.
No, because this is more meaningful. I'm taking time out of my day to send to you, to write your address on the card. That's the whole point.
Yeah, but then, you know, it's
this
it's
is the whole
clutter.
Point of minimalism, because I've gotten rid of stuff. I have freed up my time to do something meaningful, to send mail, which no one my age does. I thought it was a nice gesture.
Okay, fine. Calm down. Jeez.
Okay. Well, here's my tip of the week.
Okay.
Okay, so as we're in this holiday season, I've noticed something I love doing is, and Ariel, you're really good at it, and this is why I have some respect for you, is being grateful, showing gratitude all the time. And because when you are a minimalist, you stop. It's not that you lose your aspirations. It's that you stop trying to always be reaching for more money, for the nicest stuff, for the coolest car, for whatever it is that it is you want. You just kind of have to learn to live with what you have, to accept what you have, to appreciate what you have, and just stop always thinking, woe is me. Why don't I have that? Why can't I have what that person has? rather than just be grateful with what you have. So a couple days a week, 2-3 days a week, I write down a list of 3 things that I'm grateful for in that given day. I do this a couple mornings every week, and it kind of sets the tone for my day. And I think you guys could do it too.
Wow.
Can we get a little flavor, a little preview of what the most recent list was?
Yeah, so I mean, it just depends on the day. So I think today what I wrote about was I was grateful for the friends that picked me up to and from the airport to get me to go to Las Vegas. I was grateful for the bowl of oatmeal that I had that morning because I love oatmeal. I love oatmeal.
You actually wrote that down?
Yeah.
You couldn't just think it to yourself?
No, I wrote it down.
Okay.
Yeah, no, listen, like, grateful for everything in your life, Ariel.
Yeah, yeah.
And I also think I was grateful for, I'm just overcoming an injury, so I'm grateful to be able to exercise again because I love exercise and I go crazy when I can't.
Why do you have to write this down, though? Why can't you just say it, like, speak it into existence?
Because if you take the time to write things down, it's more likely to stick in your mind. And again, I like doing the actual, this is why, you know, I strayed from the technology, and this is why I didn't send you a text message, happy holidays, because it means more when you write something down, when you take the time out of your day, because everyone always says that, oh, I don't have time to do this, I'm too busy. No, with minimalism, you make time to do the things that are important to you.
All right. It's amazing because New York Rick works for the ESPN MMA social department. Pretty much is the man there, along with Tessa, of course. I don't want to upset anyone. But I sent TST a link on Instagram earlier, and he told me that he has deleted all social media off his phone.
You're breaking my heart, Troy. You're breaking my heart. Also, real quickly,
yes.
Happy birthday, Tessa. The aforementioned Tessa.
Wow.
Today's Tessa's birthday.
Shout out, happy Tessa. Birthday. The real brains behind the ESPN MMA
I mean, we
team.
Can call her everything. The face, the brains. Like it's
the face, the brains.
Everything.
The heartbeat.
I do
the foundation.
Yeah.
All
Happy
that
birthday.
And more. Very nice of you. All right. I think we've accomplished a lot here. We've covered a lot of ground. What do you guys think? Yes?
It was a great time.
I think the music signals that TST agrees.
And the road show was perfect.
Vegas was great, by the way. Thanks for asking.
Yeah. Well, I did ask, and you came out hot and heavy talking about how, you know, I was going to ask about your trip and this and that, how you almost got kicked out of the hotel for running up and down the stairs. I was going to ask about it all, but you had to come out and criticize the road show. Will you be back to Vegas? Will you go back? Will you at least admit that you were a little harsh on Vegas?
No, because all my criticisms are accurate.
All right. There you go.
I might be back then.
Of course, if we do another one. For now, though, we are out of time as we say goodbye on this last Wednesday of 2019, at least for us. It's not technically the last Wednesday. In fact, next Wednesday, guys, I'm going to be in Toronto for the Christmas Day game. Celtics-Raptors. Your boy doing sidelines. So you guys can sit around in your jammies. I don't even know if TST owns a television or some sort of screen. Just if you can watch and tell everyone that's at your Christmas party. I know that guy. I do a Wednesday MMA podcast with that guy. I'd feel good about it. Thank you. Thank you in advance. Anyway, we are out of time. Thank you very much to all our guests today. Thank you very much to Roy McDonald. Congratulations to him on the big deal. Very exciting stuff for PFL. Thank you very much to Elimele McFarlane. Good luck to her this Saturday. And of course, the UFC is back on Saturday as well. The final UFC event of the decade starts at 2 a.m. Eastern on ESPN and 5 a.m. Eastern main card on ESPN Plus. Frankie Edgar, the Korean Zombie. Thank you very much for listening, downloading, subscribing, rating, all that stuff and more. We'll talk to you soon. Enjoy the fights.